food is information, and we consume a finite amount in a given day. And so what are we actually telling our genes to do? You know, this is truly dictating that. And not just today, it's dictating it tomorrow and the next day.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As an anthropologist and naturopathic doctor, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body, balance, and inner badass, these are the themes that we're exploring together. Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/BE Legacy. See you there. Have you ever wondered whether it is actually all in your genes or whether you have some element of control at all? I know there's like a 50-50 split with the patients sitting in my office. Half of them would really wish that they could explain all the things that are awry in their life and in their health through their genes, and the other half are begging for the opportunity to garner more control. The reality is that the truth lies somewhere in the middle, and that's what we talked about today. Dr. Kara Fitzgerald is a naturopathic doctor, and I was honored to have her on my podcast. I heard her speak at a conference several months ago, and I was blown away by the depth of knowledge that this woman has related to this concept of epigenetics, the things that we can do to actually change our predetermined DNA. Dr. Fitzgerald is on the faculty at IFM, the Institute for Functional Medicine. She has been teaching functional medicine to both consumers and practitioners for the greater part of her career. And her area of expertise is in epigenetics and then also understanding those implications on the microbiome, meaning all the trillions of bacteria that hang out in our system. What role do they have in enacting changes in our health? We got into simple hacks that you can use on a daily basis to shift your entrepreneurial mindset, increase your energy, and improve your overall health. This was a deep conversation, a detailed conversation, and one you definitely don't want to miss. It is my pleasure to introduce you to Dr. Kara Fitzgerald. Dr. Kara Fitzgerald, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Why, thank you, Dr. Walker. It is my pleasure to once again be with you. Since we got a chance to hang out at the AANP, it's nice to reacquaint.
Yeah, well, I am super excited to have a conversation with you because your presentation that you gave, I sat there and I was furiously writing notes, both as a clinician and as someone who I think we both have this obvious passion and interest in our own health. But it was top notch. It was like the latest functional medicine information and just so relevant to people's lives. So maybe share with us a little bit about your background, how you got here, and then we're going to delve into some of your distinct areas of expertise.
Absolutely. I just had a really wonderful training. I loved going to National College of Naturopathic Medicine. Actually, it's called National University of Natural Medicine now. It's grown considerably. So my naturopathic education was just really deeply satisfying to me. And it was there that I first came across Dr. Jeffrey Bland, who, as you probably know, is a nutritional biochemist and really the father of functional medicine. I was enamored with nutritional biochemistry and medical biochemistry at the get-go, just really deeply engaged with looking at, you know, what's happening metabolically, what's happening under the hood with our bodies, like in a very precision way. And so I was really thrilled when it came time for my postdoctorate training, for my residency, to see that a laboratory was interested in bringing on naturopathic physicians for this depth biochemical training, and just being in the throes of next generation laboratory investigations. And so I leapt at that opportunity. That was out in Atlanta, Georgia. I got the position. I trained under the really respected nutritional biochemist, Dr. Richard Lord, and concurrently was in a residency in integrative medicine at Progressive Medical Center. So it was just rich. It was deep. It kept me in the cutting edge. And I described my learning curve at that time as really not a curve at all. It was vertical. I was going up. I was reading, studying, working hard all of the time during my residency. Looking at amino acids, fatty acids, organic acids, looking at nutrient and toxic elements, just, you know, talking about developing, you know, next generation assays. Our laboratory was the first clinical lab to release a DNA analysis of the gastrointestinal microbiome, which was a huge, and just being, you know, really being involved at the first steps of that, where we're now clinicians and folks across the world are really adopting these things more routinely. My training there put me almost immediately on the lecture circuit in our world, where I started educating other professionals, and that's been a big piece of my work since. I'm on faculty over at the Institute for Functional Medicine. Dr. Jeff Bland is in my world as a mentor now. Just having started there at the lab and being able to make his acquaintance, and of course his work with, you know, starting the IFM and so forth. I have a practice. I am, you know, ultimately trained as a clinician. We've got a practice in Sandy Hook Clinic, which I absolutely love. I've got a white hot nutrition team. I call them my nutrition ninjas, our dream team. And part of that is a nutrition residency. And I think we'll circle back and talk about that. I've got a really great IFM certified MD with me, Dr. Ken Litwin, and just, you know, a fabulous, wonderful team. We're very educational forward. You know, we have grand rounds, we have nutrition rounds, we're actually conducting research, just lots of things happening, and we'll circle back to talking about some of them through the course of this conversation. But it's been a wonderful journey, and one that I have, you know, just deep satisfaction with and a lot of gratitude for.
I love listening to this, because as I hear people talk, you can just hear these clues that they are entrepreneurs, either in a clinician code or something else. So I'm really excited to get into some of these initiatives that you're involved in and that you have built. What do you consider at this point, looking at all of the things that you have on the table? What's your personal quest or mission? What is it that gets you up every day and you're like, I'm after this, and these are the ways that I do it?
Well, you know, Megan, the fruit is hanging low. You know, I mean, all of us trained in this functional paradigm, all of us really wanting to change fundamentally the disease trajectory that we are on globally. The opportunity is now, and the fruit is ripe for picking. In other words, there is much to do. There is much there, and we can get involved in this conversation. It's actually imperative that we get involved in this conversation, and we're proactive and we move forward now. So my mission, and the mission of you know, my businesses, my clinical business, my work outside in the educational space, is to change that paradigm, is to really change the disease trajectory into one embracing wellness, and doing it with this, you know, with a full embrace of the systems paradigm. And I want to add one other piece to this that's incredibly near and dear to my heart, is that I'm absolutely sure that as we change the disease trajectory for us as humans, that we also tend, you know, ecologically to the planet as a whole. So it's the force for good. It's allowing that strong river to flow towards expansion, towards wellness, you know, and just towards inspiration and connection.
Well, and it's impossible to really talk about root cause medicine without talking about the environment in which health happens. Yeah, so I love that. I love that reference, and I actually feel like we don't bring it up quite enough when we're talking about these. We make it so much about us, but really, it's about the ecosystem in which we live.
Yes.
What is it? So, from a consumer perspective, from my entrepreneurs and go-getters out there who are listening to it, what is your like primary area of focus? Who are the types of people who walk into your office where you're like, I've got this. This is my clinical jam.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's probably a twofold question. I think anybody who's been practicing functional medicine for a while, and I have, you know, for the duration of my career, you know, there comes a, and I've been out there on educating and lecturing and so on and so forth. So there's, you know, people know me to a certain extent. Our practices inch towards high complexity cases. And I think probably folded into that is because I had such a strong training in laboratory science, we tend to attract patients into our practice from all over the world, but, you know, mostly in the United States, that really have complex chronic conditions, things that need to be carefully unpacked and investigated, and the full systems functional model needs to be used in a depth, careful way to rebuild these individuals. So that's who we see in practice by and large. We do actually, though, we want to be available to the greater population, and we have some straightforward programs that people can jump in and engage with to optimize wellness, and they don't need to be that far along, you know, the disease or the imbalance continuum. So we try to serve a broad audience, but people who generally want to come and see me specifically, we're looking at a level of complexity and they want that drill down analysis. But I also lecture in the immune module at the Institute for Functional Medicine with a sub focus on allergic disease. And that's also been a big part of my practice. And reactivity, environmental reactivity, food reactivity is massive. It extends well beyond, you know, the classic IgE mediated allergy or, you know, i.e. reacting to, you know, ragweed in the spring or having an allergic reaction to different foods. So this reactivity piece is a big part of my practice as well.
Which leads me to a question I actually didn't intend to ask you at all, but just out of interest, because in the last few weeks, I've just had this epidemic of individuals coming through my office who are adults who are reacting in an immediate hypersensitivity type reaction to foods that they've never reacted to in their whole life, whether it is hives, whether they're ending up in the emergency department with a full-on anaphylactic reaction to foods. What's going on with these adults?
Yeah, it's multifactorial, Megan, and we could have a really great conversation around it. And it needs to be unpacked. So it's individualized. One of the things we were talking about recently at one of our grand rounds is this alpha gal allergy, you know, which is a cross reaction with a tick bite that actually, interestingly, there's a sugar in ticks that can cross react with a sugar in meat, and that can bring on, you know, sudden anaphylaxis in an individual. It's really pretty crazy. So that's an isolated piece, and you have to be, you know, bitten by a lone star tick or some other species that we don't see a whole lot about. But we were just talking about that, and so I want to bring that up. But by and large, adult the incidence of adult onset allergy is rising, as is autoimmunity and a lot of these hypersensitivity issues, immune imbalance issues. So, you know, why is that? If we go to if we return to a functional approach, we're going to be thinking about the whole being. So we're thinking about digestion and absorption. We're thinking about, you know, how well we're metabolizing or breaking down our food and integrating our food. We're thinking about intestinal permeability and so on and so forth. So that whole symphony, that whole cascade of events, you know, from consuming food to digesting and absorbing it, the quality of our foods, toxins, etc., you know, the amount of processed stuff we're eating, all of this can make a difference. I mean, there was a really interesting, actually, there have been a host of studies looking at acid blocking therapy, proton pump inhibitors, H2 blockers, etc., and an increased incidence in adult onset allergic disease, including anaphylaxis. So, you know, they are one of the top 10 class of medications prescribed in this country and probably Canada. So you shut down acid, incredibly common. You increase the risk profoundly of allergic sensitization. So that would, I would say, if you're seeing this in your patients, this onset of adult reactivity, that you want to take a full history, look at for all of the clues, and then think about, the cascade of events from choosing that food and consuming it and how well they're doing and what's going on in their gut and how they're digesting, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, there's all sorts of nutrients involved that help regulate the immune system. So, how's the microbiome? Where's their vitamin D? Where's their vitamin A, et cetera, et cetera. It's interesting. And I think, we do really well. Functional medicine is just powerfully and uniquely situated to be able to address these hypersensitivities of whatever flavor and deal with it and turn it around. And I just want to throw in one other piece on this, and then you can clarify what I've said if you need to or ask
no,
me
it's
any
good.
Other questions.
It's good.
Folks who are versed in elimination diets, there's people who come to me in my practice now, and to our nutrition team and to Dr. Litwin, who've already initiated fairly limiting diets. And there can be, we can increase reactivity when our diet becomes too limited, too hypoallergenic. And that's another conversation, but something that we need to be paying attention to with our extremely health conscious, very advanced patients. We need some resilience, and we need to embrace a diet as expanded as possible.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that resilience piece, because two things were happening while you were talking. One, I had this smug little smile because for my patients who are listening, I'm like, yes, see, I love it when other people reiterate the things that I'm telling you, that lifestyle and environment and medication, all these things are going to have an impact in terms of how your body is reacting. But that second piece too, where you talk about resilience, I think we both end up with a whole spectrum of patients who come in, they're like, I'm totally healthy if I live my life in this bubble. And,
yes.
And we are these biological entities that are meant to interact with our environment. And if we can't interact with it, it's a problem.
That's right. That's right. And so we need to be mindful around that. In fact, I was talking to a patient yesterday who came to me with really severe allergies. And during the course of our work together, she her symptoms, her reactivity heightened and expanded. So she started to react to loads of foods that she previously wasn't sensitive to. And that was a phase that she was moving through, and that she's completely out the other side of it. But it's, so there's this bucket of building individual resilience, really expanding the ability to interact and tolerate, exposures in the environment, be it food or where you're going or where you're living, if you're transiently exposed to mold, if you go in an old building for whatever reason, and just building a tolerance to that so people can get really on with their big full life. And that's a journey, that's something that we work at with the rebuild. And it was just great to hear from this woman, how strong she was and how resilient she was. But also, too, the lesson in her story is that we need to be careful about the long-term initiation, either patient-initiated micro diets, very exclusionary diets, or even us, when we start those exclusionary diets, really having an endpoint in mind while we're rebuilding and balancing the patient.
Yeah. And for the people listening who are like, oh, does this mean McDonald's has a role to play in my life at some point? That's not what we're talking about. Diversity of real foods, because our bodies are meant to interact with the environment, which I think is a really interesting segue to talking about an area of expertise for you, which is this idea of epigenetics. And I know this concept is something that is deeply intriguing to our audience, and yet they don't even know it because they're probably like, I'm sorry, what's that word that you just used? Can you share with us a little bit about what epigenetics is and actually why we all really do care about it?
Yeah, it's so cool. It's just the evolution of this, quote, omics era. Once we mapped the genome, once we identified all the genes in humans, that really opened the floodgates for us looking at what proteins are formed in response to those genes and what you know, and what, how it influences the microbiome and, you know, how the various metabolic byproducts of all of this. So it just exploded. And that's really the foundation of the systems model. And it turns out that an incredibly important layer in this omics world is the layer of the epigenome. And so we've got our genes, we've got about 23,000 genes, and it's packed tightly, you know, and our chromosomes are packed tightly into these nucleuses at the, you know, the center of a cell. We've got about 6 feet of DNA, maybe a little bit less, and it's wound and packaged around these things called histones and nucleosomes, et cetera. The 6 feet is packaged exquisitely tightly and very deliberately into the nuclei of cells. And on the surface of that DNA and in those proteins that the DNA is wrapped around, there are what we call epigenetic marks. Probably the best known and the one that I've spent a lot of time looking at are the methylation marks. And this is not literally like a mark or a check mark that you would do with a pencil, but these are molecules that are intentionally placed, little carbons with three hydrogens, that's what a methyl group is, intentionally placed on regions of the DNA to influence how that DNA is expressed. That's the epigenome. Now, some of these epigenetic marks are passed on and dictated by where our parents were. This is mom and dad, and these epigenetic marks can be passed on generationally. And this absolutely influences DNA, and it influences what we are, what we look like, our phenotype, what we look like at the end of the day. So this can be passed on generationally, but it's more immediately impactful than genetic changes. So a genetic mutation for it to actually take hold in our bodies is millennia in the making, you know, long time in the making. But these epigenetic changes, they can be passed on, but in a much more immediate and profound way. So in other words, we know that if grandma smoked, granddaughter or grandson can have an increased risk of asthma because grandma's smoking during pregnancy. So grandma's smoking with and mom's in her belly. So that's that influence of the cigarette smoke is going to alter the way the DNA expresses of mom, and that's going to in turn be passed down to mom's offspring and alter their DNA expression via the epigenome and increase vulnerability to asthma. And if you look at the science around it, you'll see all sorts of chronic conditions that we face today, you know, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, metabolic syndrome, autoimmunity, being influenced in that short-term generational push. And it's just absolutely remarkable. But concurrently, so we've got many generations of cells. Our cells are dividing all of the time. What we're doing today will influence those methylation marks and other epigenetic components that will alter the way our DNA is expressed. It's absolutely incredible. So not only if we're preconception, you know, if we're going to have kids, not only can we really influence the outcome of their well-being by how we're living in a very immediate way, what you and I are doing at any time is going to influence the expression of our own DNA through these epigenetic manipulations. And it's absolutely fascinating, and it's absolutely powerful, and it's really, really, really one of the big places where the rubber meets the road on why, you know, every day we do the best we can, you know, to live a good full life, because we're influencing the outcome of our disease or our health span, and we're going to influence, you know, of course, our offspring's health span powerfully, and not only our offspring's, but our offspring's health span. So it's an important area of investigation and one I'm extremely interested in and passionate about. And, you know, we're practicing it here in the clinic, and we're actually involved in a research study as well, looking at the influence of diet and lifestyle on the epigenome.
I suspect what's happening for a lot of people right now is they're driving in their cars and they're drinking their coffee and they're chewing on a granola bar that came out of a package. And they're like, oh gosh, are you telling me that what I am doing right now is going to potentially influence my grandchildren? Because I haven't had kids yet. So like when we're talking about this, and I agree, this is super cool stuff, because now we're talking about intergenerational health and your capacity to influence it, which is a powerful responsibility. But are there things that we do? I'm really obsessed with people's habits because this is where things have a cumulative effect. But from a habit perspective and things people do on a daily basis, are there some really big ones that you're like, if you could just stop this, please stop it? And conversely, are there some things that you're like, if you just included these one or two little things, we'd have a really profound influence on that epigenetic environment within your body?
God, that's a great question. That's a really, really good question. It's funny, you know, when you're talking about the coffee drinking granola bar person.
With all due respect.
Yeah, with all due respect. I'm a coffee drinker. In fact, I've looked for favorable epigenetic outcomes with coffee because I don't really feel like giving up my habit.
Yeah, me too.
I really don't want to. There's some suggestion out there. You guys pay attention and I'll let you know if coffee is alley and free. It should be. I think, but anyway, there's this really interesting, so I'm thinking to those individuals listening who are eating their, McMuffin or whatever the heck that they're munching on is, food is information and we consume a finite amount in a given day. And so what are we actually telling our genes to do? You know, this is truly dictating that. And not just today, it's dictating it tomorrow and the next day. So is sleep. So is exercise. So is mindfulness. So really all of these things are very influential. There was this incredible animal study. So a lot of our epigenetic research, we've got a nice data pool of human research, but a lot is still at the level of mice, animal studies, because it's a newer field. But there's this fascinating research study that came out on sugar. One single high glucose meal in mice was associated with genetic changes towards inflammation and other damaging processes, well past that single exposure, well past. So if you're eating your cake and you think, okay, I'm going to wake up tomorrow and be fine, well, you have altered your epigenome, biasing it towards inflammation. So that's one piece. I mean, the power of our food, food is information, just can't be understated. However, I also want to say that the stress response influences epigenetic expression as well, and really pretty powerfully. So if you're eating that information that's going to direct your epigenetic expression in a direction not favorable, you want to just back out of it gently and go easy on yourself concurrently. Whipping yourself, into a frenzy, into a stressed frenzy is also not helpful. So I think there's a dance of balance and allowing us to be human, doing the best that we can at any given time. Exercise has also been shown to really favorably, modulate epigenetic expression. So it's something that we want to do, but we want to do it within balance. So there's as much research out there showing that excessive exercise for where somebody is in their fitness, this is obviously not one size fits all by any stretch, but excessive exercise can be damaging as well. So it's a balance. I mean, there was actually a really cool study looking at Tai Chi in women and those who are really committed to it, especially those who are like, I think 50 and above. It had these very clear anti-aging properties associated with it. So not only were they getting some movement, but they were getting that centering piece as well. So it's, in my mind, the journey is making the best choice at any given moment and doing the best you can with it. Incidentally, sleep is another thing. Sleep is a profound nourishment and healing time. And again, an interesting animal study, one episode of sleep deprivation was associated with lasting epigenetic changes. So that's another piece of the puzzle. Sleeping as best we can. And I've actually lectured on epigenetics all over the world. And, the first time I presented that particular data, I was in Ireland and I was extremely sleep deprived and jet lagged. And it was just, the irony wasn't lost on me at all. I was chuckling and I shared with them, I'm augmenting it now as I stand up here speaking to you and wanting to operate on all cylinders, but I'm in fact extremely tired. But we do, the other piece of that study was that when they had their catch up, that sort of deep sleep where where you're just in coma because you're catching up on the much needed Z's, that did not restore them fully. So sleep deprivation followed by catch up, doing that over and over again, It's not healthy, but obviously we're going to be experiencing that at times in our lives. So sleep hygiene as a general practice is really important to the health span. And then, of course, diet, you know, that information. We can eat in our – so we have a – we've got an ebook out called The Methylation Diet and Lifestyle where we talk about all of this. And, you know, as I said before, we're actively researching it now, or we're recruiting for our research study. We've gotten IRB approval and, you know, we're just pushing that boat from short. But we advocate, you know, a couple of pieces for the diet that we think are really important to balancing the epigenome. Now, one of the things, I'm in a clinical practice where we're prescribing extremely individualized diets all of the time. We've got somebody with ulcerative colitis, they respond to, you know, a specific carbohydrate diet, or, you know, they respond to a paleo diet, you know, all that's all good and fine, or we need to eliminate a certain handful of foods for that particular individual. That's all fine. But then what we do within our practice is that we layer on those methylation dietary principles. So we always have people consume foods rich in methyl donors. You know, one of our best is liver. And so those brave souls who are willing to get in there and eat, you know, clean sourced liver. We have a great pate recipe. My liver of choice, if I'm going to be eating liver, is going to be as pate. And we've got a great recipe on the website. Major methyl donors in that. We want people who can handle eggs to get choline. Choline is another really essential piece of good methylation. Nuts and seeds, things high in magnesium, things high in folate. Our microbiome, incidentally, makes folate for us, makes natural, very bioavailable folate. So we support a healthy microbiome, and there are key probiotics that that can do that for us. And then the other really cool thing, Megan, and then I'll hush here, is what we're calling a family of methylation adaptogens. So with regard to epigenetic methylation, it's a balance. It's balance, balance, balance. It isn't just, let me throw methyl donors at this individual. Let me give them a load of B12 and a load of folate and the other methyl donors. No, it's really about balance. So we know that hypermethylation of the epigenome, specifically, too many of those methyl groups on certain parts of our genes will actually shut down expression. It will inhibit expression. Now, that can be incredibly favorable, but that can also be problematic. You don't want to shut down those proteins that are inhibiting inflammation. You don't want to inhibit detoxification capabilities. And, you know, you want to allow those tumor suppressor genes full rein. You don't want to inhibit and shut those down. So hypermethylation is a problem, as well as hypomethylation. So a gene that should be shut down, you want it to be able to be shut down. So there's this idea of balance in the epigenome, and it's not just simply let me load myself up forever on methyl donors and call it good. It's about balance, and it's about casting the wide net. So methylation adaptogens are an amazing group of polyphenol, mostly compounds that have this balancing effect. One of the most important and well-studied one is curcumin. We're recommending curcumin all of the time. It's such a potent anti-inflammatory. It's got these powerful anti-cancer effects and, you know, just loads of endless benefits. And one of the ways it's doing that, and arguably one of the more important ways curcumin is providing this amazing benefit, is through its ability to augment epigenetic expression, to balance it, you know, not just push it in one way and the other, but actually have this balancing capacity. Many of our polyphenolic compounds, blueberries, tomatoes, what else? Resveratrol, a compound called luteolin. I mean, and really kind of the list goes on. EGCG is another just really wonderful balancing. So drinking that green tea, that is likely a big piece of why green tea is so fabulous. In all of our patients, regardless of the diet we prescribe, we're layering methyl donors and we're layering in methylation adaptogens. And I think that's, you know, a big piece of where the rubber meets the road as far as fostering and nurturing a solid health span.
Yeah, this is like the key message here is that it takes a diversity of things that you're putting into your system. And the one-off trip to McDonald's isn't going to kill you, but doing it every single day, you're it's a lot of counter pressure. Your body really has to start to apply.
Right. Yeah, that's right. We only have X amount of calories, you know, to use a sort of a gross term, but we only have X amount of food we get to ingest every day. We only have X amount, you know, we have 24 hours in the day. We only have X amount of time and, you know, just using that, respecting that.
Yeah, I absolutely, I couldn't agree more. In the busyness of today and in the environment that we live in and the stress that we're under, do you think people can do it with diet and lifestyle alone, or do they need supplementation?
That's a great question. Well, this journey into the land of epigenetics, one of the pivotal questions for me was wondering, as I really sat with this idea of balance of epigenetic expression, you know, of balance of genetic methylation, I stood back, especially with regard to cancer. There's loads and loads and loads and loads of research on cancer and hypermethylation. So genes are turned off. Like one of the genes that's been identified to be hypermethylated is the BRCA gene. So we know the BRCA mutation, the BRCA mutation, is associated with an incredibly high risk for a number of different cancers in men and women. So if you have that mutation, you know, you're careful. Chances are extremely careful, and you know, you're working with the doctor, you're aware of it, et cetera, and there's things to do there. But we can also hypermethylate that gene and turn it off also, and that's been associated likewise with certain cancers from ovarian to prostate. So this hypermethylation piece, you know, really stopped me in my tracks around, you know, what are we doing to, are we potentially, as we enter into this age of aggressive supplementation, could we be doing something that's imbalancing, you know, that's promoting imbalanced methylation of our genome? Is that possible? Should we step back and look at a more nuanced approach? And that's what launched this entire book, because I realized, you know, mitochondrial fitness, microbiome status, getting sleep, as I said, exercise, you know, eating certain foods and all of these balancing, you know, so-called methylation adaptogen foods, I realized that the picture was bigger, broader, infinitely more expansive than just to take or not to take B12 and folate. So I have shifted, and I cast a much broader net with myself and with my patients. So we honor all of these things that influence methylation. And without a doubt, Megan, when supplements are indicated, I use them in practice. I absolutely prescribe supplements, and I think they're an important adjunct component to the work that we do, unequivocally. However, I'm more nuanced with it. I'm recognizing the power of them in a way that I was less sensitive to when I was at the laboratory. So when I was at the laboratory, I was hopeful with nutritional biochemistry that, you know, pinpoint nutrient supplementation, you know, pinpoint vitamin and mineral supplementation would change the world. And it's as I've evolved in my career that I've, you know, backed up far and have cast this much wider net. So supplementation, as indicated, absolutely unequivocally important. Most all of my patients actually are on supplements of one form or another, but we change them and we have an end point in mind, and we think about, you know, we do the lowest amount to get the results that we need.
Yeah, it's a key point that you even say that end point in mind. I wish this was a question, and I encourage my patients to ask this of their primary care providers with respect to medication, is what's the end game here? Mm-hmm. What additional strategies are we going to use so that I'm not dependent on this medication or supplement or intervention over the long term? It's an important conversation to have. So respecting that broad picture description that you just provided, is there one thing that you would encourage entrepreneurs, people on a mission, busy, purposeful people to do every single day that will move the needle a little bit? Like if they could just fit one new habit in?
Geez, what would I say? I would say, you know, what... That's such a big question, and I think it's individualized. I would say, I want to give you one panacea, you know, one clear shot,
or three things that they can pick which one most applies to them, like the sleep, the shift your diet? Is there, is there one thing?
So I would say in the realm of food, think about incorporating a methylation adaptogen. Actually, if you go to our website, you can get a really nice, nice, beautiful handout on methylation adaptogens. I would say incorporate at least one methylation adaptogen into your diet without question, unequivocally. Get some methylation adaptogens going because they're going to be – they're balancers. So that would be in the realm of food. In the realm of lifestyle, I would say – you know, keep yourself moving and continue to move on a daily basis, and do something within your zone, you know, something that's safe for you, but also something that you're passionate about, that you love to do. I love riding my bike. I actually just was at the gym pedaling away because it's like below zero here right now. But, you know, that's an important nourishing activity for me that makes me happy. And that happy component is, you know, is what we want. So when you look at our if you get the methylation adaptogen handout and you check them out, you know, make sure you're not forcing something down that you really don't like. You know, put together a protocol that's going to make you happy, and do it. You know, and just incorporate it in a gentle but consistent way. And remember that it's the consistency over time. So these things that you pick, you know, hang in there. If you love green tea, get a fabulous form of it, and you know, have a cup of green tea every day. If you can have more than a cup, that's awesome. For me, I supplement with EGCG. That I love green tea, but I wanted a little right now, actually, for about 3 months, I want to turn the volume up on my EGCG. So I'm going to use some supplements to do that. And that's okay. So incorporate some methylation adaptogens, get some movement going, but do it in a way that you're passionate about, that makes you happy. Because that will, you know, basically, to use a really bad quote, kill a couple birds with one stone. And I would say start there.
And we'll link up all of the handouts and all of the resources that you're talking about. They're all available for everybody in our show notes so that they can make these small changes, which I think are just so important. I want to shift gears a little bit because I want to make sure that we talk about this, because I feel like we could really have this ongoing conversation that we've been having all day long. But
I know
what's so interesting about it is I know we have nutritionists in our audience, we have practitioners in our audience. Can you share a little bit more about some of the initiatives that that you have going on where people can go even deeper in terms of understanding some of these pieces, because this is a core tenet of how you are expressing and putting your knowledge out there into the world as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, so education at the laboratory was front and center. Dr. Andy Brawley, who started the laboratory with his wife Carolyn Brawley, you know, way back in the early 80s, they were education centric, you know, as much as, you know, they were probably more geared towards education than they were actually, you know, bottom line financially. I don't know. He might argue that. But at any rate, we were always very education forward, and it takes a village to kind of keep us current and moving through and noshing on and metabolizing new ideas and debating and talking about how we actually incorporate these things into our practice. So that was a cornerstone of my training. I'm sure that I've got, you know, epigenetic shifts based on that really rich educational environment that I was brought up in my postdoc years. That is front and center in my practice. That is absolutely front and center. I have a journal club of colleagues that I love. I've got, and as I said, here in our space, we're doing a lot of things. So I bring that to the people who work here and I extend it beyond. We have a functional nutrition residency program. It's rigorous. It's competitive. It is so much fun. We actually just finished doing a little bone broth research study, so stay tuned for those results. And that was run by one of our residents, Jill. And so, you know, we'll publish on that. That was really cool. So we've got a great functional nutrition residency program, and they're in the trenches with us, you know, actively engaging in patient care and doing educational projects beyond that. And born out of that, so I have people come and precept or come and shadow at me in my practice all the time, but there's a very limited amount of time to do that. And I've had lots of non-nutritionists request access to the program that they're able to do, but we really need nutritionists. internists because they're caring for our patient population. So we started a clinical development program that's open to clinicians of many different stripes. And we are, for both of our programs, we're IFM educational programs. So these are very, very closely associated with IFM, and they're steeped in the IFM training module or the training program. So anyone can have access to sharing with us, to observing how it is we practice functional medicine here. And it's, again, very educational forward. So folks get to join us in our physician rounds, in our nutrition rounds. We have teach-ins where we bring in experts and dialogue with them. And again, this was actually born out of what I'm doing in practice. So it's fun, and we've expanded it to meet CDP. But, you know, as a doctor, I'm consulting with experts in the field all of the time. I'm calling, you know, Dr. X over at Laboratory Y to discuss these results. You know, I'm vetting supplements. I'm seeking education on different programs all of the time as a clinician for my patients. And we basically just opened the door to other clinicians to come in and participate in that. And those are what we're calling our teach-ins. We've got active Q&As where questions are posted over the course of the month, and then I get in there and dialogue on them. Dr. Litwin is presenting patients' cases monthly, and we have an active private Facebook page where everybody dialogues. And one of the beautiful things that's emerged with our clinical development program and our functional nutrition residency program is that people are, Oh, and also, too, I forget to say this. We have a massive amount of didactic content. So we've got a whole webpage devoted to the clinical development program, and people, you know, download loads and loads of content. Again, all based around what we're doing in clinical practice. There's loads of case studies. There's, you know, the various diets that we prescribe and how we individualize tests that we're using, et cetera, et cetera. All of that is there. So it's a dense program. There's lots there. And as this group's kind of coalesced and, you know, really formed as a lovely unit, they have study groups, and people can participate in those as they're inclined to do. So you can do as little hours as involved in it, and it's entirely virtual. We've got people from all over the world in it, or you can do as many. So you can be as involved as you desire. Everything is recorded. People can listen to all of our content at a later date at their convenience. We're actually accepting applications now for our March cohort. And of course, we've got, you know, an early bird discount and so forth. Applications need to be in by February 19th. We are going to be doing a live FAQ conversation. So if this is something that might interest you, if you can join us in that live Q&A, do so, and you'll talk to me and the team that's involved with doing it. And, you know, it's just a really beautiful, outcropping or growth from, you know, the foundation that I was trained in, that it's just a very natural extension of that. And I think folks really, really love it. It's been quite fun.
It's amazing. I love hearing these stories about how people take their purpose and passion and create all of these tentacles where it can be amplified and disseminated in ways that have more impact. That's yes. Totally my jam. Well done. I love it.
Let me just say one more thing about it, just circling back to what we can do. This was a low-hanging fruit. This wasn't anything I carved out of rock. It was just, this is a request I'm being asked of. And that practice of actually seeing our next step, you know, over the river, the next stone over the river, if you will, the practice of kind of training your eyes on the next correct step for you as an entrepreneur, it's something that we can do. It's actually Richard Lord, my mentor at the lab, kind of taught me that. And so this clinical development program, you know, that we've really enjoyed was an outcropping of just an outgrowth of requests to participate. And it was a natural, you know, relatively stress-free thing for us to expand towards, because it was, you know, it's almost like a meant to be thing. And our clinic arrangement is appropriate for that. So my question to you would be, or to, you know, to the folks listening who are entrepreneurs, is, you know, what are your next steps? What can you see that's easy, that, you know, it's going to be effortful, but maybe simple is the word. You know, what are the next clear steps so that you're not, you know, like Sisyphus pushing the rock up the hill? You know, what's natural for the movement for you in your world?
Yeah, it's such a great point. You just have to trust, and you have to follow the intuition. You have just to feel it sometimes. Stop thinking so much.
That's right. And it's really incredibly rewarding. I think what I've found with my team, we're up to, but there's about 15 people working here now in the clinic. That's our core team. And then we've got the CDP and our residents as well. It's a passionate bunch. I mean, there are people who just really share that desire to do the drill down and, you know, are education centric and so forth. So that's what the face of who we are has become. And I'm, you know, infinitely grateful for that being where I am. It's a real firmament of, you know, satisfying investigation all the time.
I really do love that. And I think it's incredible what you've built. One of the most important considerations for my patients is how closely can they follow my instructions? How easy is it to be compliant? If you take supplements, you know that tracking down the exact products that your healthcare provider recommends can be a huge hassle. This is the reason that I use Fullscript as my online dispensary, so my patients can get the exact products I recommend delivered straight to the door. The best part is that Fullscript sends out refill reminders when you're running low, and it makes it totally effortless to stay on track with your protocols. Never hassle with supplements again. Ask your healthcare provider to sign you up for Fullscript. If you're a healthcare provider, you can sign up for a totally free account at fullscript.com/anthropology. What a great way to sort of transition to the second component of the interview, where people really get a chance to see a little bit more behind the scenes in terms of some of the things that you do in your own life to support all of these things that are taking place. And we call this section our KPIs, or key performance indicators. So just like we have those in our business, I believe we have them with respect to the actions that we take for our health. So if you will indulge me, I've got 6 quick questions for you.
Go for it.
Okay, first question. Do you have a consistent morning routine? And if so, can you share?
I wake up slow. There's a poem, I forget who it's by, but somebody will know. Wake to live and take my waking slow. But anyway, I wake up, I actually wake up early. I'm a morning person. I like to wake up when it's still dark out. I just love the quiet of that energy. I love it. And so I like to wake up really early, and I like to take it a little bit slowly. So I've got a stretch of downtime. I find that's incredibly important for me in starting a good day. I have a spiritual practice. I have an inner connectedness practice that's always a part of my morning. Actually, it's always a part to a varying degree, but sometimes I'll, you know, be much more intentional. Many days out of the week, I'll take a good chunk of time, a good hour plus, as a part of my own spiritual practice. So my morning time is sacred to me. I like to fold in, if possible, my exercise in the morning. I really like to bang out, you know, whatever to get myself going and started. So morning is a sacred time for me.
I like the oscillation between spiritual practice and bang out exercise. It's like that's balance right there. It's awesome. Fiction or nonfiction? What are you reading right now?
Oh my goodness. Well, listen, TV wise, let me just tell you this. I did over the holiday, because we shut our practice down for the week between Christmas and New Year's, which is a very total first. I will admit that I binged on that BBC TV show, Peaky Blinders.
I don't know this.
Oh my God, it's this crazy gangster show from, you know, turn of the early 20th century Birmingham, England. If you're repulsed by any degree of violence, don't see it. But if you want something that's almost like The Godfather circa, you know, 1910 Birmingham, England, it's pretty cool. Good plot. So I enjoyed that. That was total fiction. But a lot of my reading these days, what I enjoy is science. You know, my favorite magazine is The Scientist. And I think there's lots of bits and bobs in there that I want to, you know, pull on further and read. But I tend to probably swim in this pond, perhaps. I don't know. Maybe I need to pick up a good mystery or something. Some people might argue that, but I do enjoy reading, even in my off time, you know, what we're doing, you know, in this world.
What is one thing you are most consistent with respect to your health?
I'd say my morning routine I'm most consistent with.
Yeah, it's funny how often we hear that. There's like mm-hmm. there's powerful little consistencies that we start to see.
Yep.
What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
Okay, I've got two opposite sides of the spectrum. I'll share with you. It's kind of funny. I love to knit.
That's awesome.
I mean, I can't. I'm a horrible knitter, though. I'm very slow in plotting. I've got no skills around any special stitches. I only knit scarves. If you're close to me, chances are you've gotten a scarf or you're going to soon.
That's so good.
And you'll see the knots in it, and there'll be little bits of thread here and there, but whatever. It's just, for whatever reason, I enjoy it. I guess somebody said it's the bilateral stimulation, so I'll go with that. And I grew up as a musician. I was a bass player in a punk rock band.
That is badass. Okay, I love
badass.
It.
Yeah, it was badass. We got to play a lot. We did some touring. It was pretty crazy. Yeah.
What do you do for fun or play? I suspect maybe knitting and music are it, but is there anything else that features there?
I love, love, love the beach. You know, every year we get a cottage up. We've got really great ocean here in Rhode Island and in Massachusetts, but I'm a big fan of Rhode Island, which is the smallest state. It's a little postage stamp of a state, but it's got this brilliant ocean, and it's just really, really nourishing and heavenly for me to be up at the beach. And I love riding my bike around, you know. That's a rejuvenation destination for me every year.
It's a beautiful image to think about right now, as it's -500 with wind chill here in Toronto today. So I'm gonna fixate on that all day. My last question for you, entrepreneurism, are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
Oh my God. Unequivocally, I learned, and I've been banging my head. I mean, I didn't expect to leave the laboratory. The laboratory was where I landed, and I was anticipating staying there. And now here I am running a business, running a thing that's growing and has a lot. There's a lot of irons and fires, and I did not anticipate being here in my journey. Journey in life, and it's been awesome. So I would say you can learn it, and you can learn it being very non-business minded. So that's what's happened. That's my story.
Well, Dr. Kara Fitzgerald, we are so glad that you actually took that journey. I love what you are up to. Where can people find out more about all these initiatives that you've got going on?
Yeah, just so go head over to our website, and I think we'll furnish you with show note material just
everything.
As you need to.
Yep.
Yep. So my website is my name. It's Dr. Kara, which is Kara Fitzgerald.com. And you'll find all of the links there. And if you've got any questions, just shoot us an email. We're extremely responsive.
Great. This is all hooked up in the show notes. I can't thank you enough for your time. This is such an informative interview and a ton of fun.
It was fun. Well, it's really nice to reconnect with you, Megan, and may our paths cross soon.
Absolutely.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Entrepology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.